This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Buenaderos, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, not of any organization with which we have been, are, or will be affiliated.
This is episode 22, Play for Free on Free to Play.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is Phaedra Buenaderos, and I'm here with Michael Martin today, and we're here to talk to you about games.
How is it in North Carolina today, Phaedra?
It's a stunningly beautiful, gorgeous fall day. How about in Budapest, Michael?
It is also likewise gorgeous, a little on the chilly side here, but the leaves are changing colors. I can see for what feels like miles out my window.
So
let's jump right into the conversation. We've got a couple of neat topics to hit today. The first of which is this free-to-play business model. So why don't we explore that a little bit?
Indeed. So for those of you who have been following what's happening within the gaming industry, there's certainly been some significant trends that are sticking. For example, user-generated content, and certainly this new business model associated with free-to-play. Now, this doesn't mean that everything is free, as nice as that would be. What it means is that you jump into a game, and at first it's free, but then as you want to level up your character, as you want to buy that special armor, as you want to unlock a particularly cool looking level, that's when you pay micropayments. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really interesting about this model, this has been quite popular in countries out in East Asia. A lot of companies out there are really profiting quite a bit from this model. In fact, there have been presentations given at the Game Developers Conference, as well as E3 and others, where they're saying that this model has been more profitable than selling boxed games at $50 a pop. So
really?
They spend quite a lot of effort building up a community around these games, and in essence, fostering a persistent world that they can then quickly adapt to. They integrate the e-commerce, they allow people to do these micropayments, and that's really been taking off.
That makes a lot of sense. I guess when you think about it, if you make your game sticky enough that people want to persist and play as frequently as they may, then a small couple of micropayments here or there, all of a sudden, before long, you are now invested in the platform and you don't want to leave. And there's only a few more little micropayments here and there that allows you to get those, you know, next levels of armor or that really cool object that you just saw your friend had, right?
Agreed. And mm-hmm. and what I think is really compelling about this is not only what it is doing within the world of entertainment games, but also what it could do for serious games, especially for use by military. You know, if you could go and create a persistent world with toolkits that allow you to drop in 3D models, associate behaviors with them, and have this persistent world be something that's, for example, built on geospecific content, like pulling in GIS maps, right. I mean, this could be something really quite significant.
So let's talk about that for a second. What would the currency be if we're thinking about micropayments for those kinds of games? Would you think that the players themselves would want to pay for that?
Well, whether it's the players or whether it's the agencies,
the
for example, if it's a
certain,
exactly. And let's say what they'd want, for example, is very curated content. Like if they want certain streams of live data, right? That would be an extra payment. If they want to be able to have a certain special kind of behavior within the game that is not default, that would be a separate kind of payment.
Well, so under the concept of art being removing everything from whatever it is that is not art, many games and gaming kind of environments, even things like Twitter, use a constraint, artificial or real, to force the players to do something very specific. So under the model you just described, if you and I are playing such a game and our sponsoring organization is picking up the micropayments, for you and for me, it really wouldn't matter. We'd be just happy to add additional elements to the game all the time, and we don't feel that pinch of the micropayment, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And imagine with this kind of a persistent world, I had mentioned user-generated content. I mean, that would be critical. So now you're going to the community as well to help populate these persistent worlds that where you're keeping the engine running. So now that also drives your cost.
Unless we're doing something where that the players have a certain bank, you know, an amount of mana or an amount of points or something that now we are constrained there and we have to really use the economy within the game to spend those micropayments that our sponsoring organization is picking up for us in a judicious fashion. Maybe that's the way to handle that.
That could be.
Huh, that's really, really interesting. I play a lot of games that are free to play, and one of the things that I like to do with those games is make sure I play for free. and I take that as a personal point of pride. How's that for alliteration with the microphone here? I need a pop filter or something, I'm sure. But I make it a point of pride that when I'm given those opportunities to say, hey, you know, for example, the Simpsons has this game called Tapped Out that Michael Rowe, who I'm sure is going to be jealous that we're talking about this and really would like to be here today, and he would. So Michael, shout out to you. Hello. But he clued me into this game, and the Simpsons game here has its current one of the currencies that it has in addition to dollars that has these power-ups of donuts, and these irradiated or radiation donuts have the power of bending time. So in this game, you spend your time creating buildings and doing tasks and quests like many of these games, and the task might take 12 hours, and if you were to apply, you know, some number of donuts to it, you know, you could accomplish that task in a hurry, like, you know, right now, as opposed to 12 hours on the clock. So, and you can go and buy them. You could buy a boatload of donuts or, you know, a truckload of donuts. And I don't buy any donuts. I let the game either give them to me or I just let the time go.
I could use one of those irradiated donuts right about now.
I could too. I could use several of them, especially any one that actually worked the other way, that slow time down. That would be more helpful, I think, for me. Mm-hmm. Much more helpful.
Agreed.
But I don't know about you, but the games that I play like this, there are micropayments in them, but I tend to refuse to pay the micropayments. And in doing so, the game takes longer and maybe I'm more or less invested in it than someone who's spent money. But I find it still fun. And it's a little bothersome that I got to wait so long for things to happen. But then, you know, there are other games to play too. Where do you fall, Phaedra? Do you do that as well, or do you pay for micropayments in the games you play?
It depends. It depends on the game. I would say most of them, I'm also lounging around for free and checking it out. But some of them, you know, as soon as I get sucked into the vortex, I'll start paying for some special things. But I think, as I was saying, with serious games, especially mm-hmm. for military use, I think that you'd have some sort of a default persistent world that could have some level of usefulness, especially in terms of gleaning user-generated models and behaviors. But then the idea is that as soon as you wanted that specialized in some way, whether you wanted real streaming content that was very particular, that's when you would unlock that extra service.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I think the mm-hmm. economics of that model, you know, has to be looked at from both, you know, the organization, the military organization, or the analyst organization that's sponsoring the creation of that world, as opposed to the analyst or the warfighter that's actually in
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Because if you think about the way that serious games are now procured for military as well as a lot of other organizations, it can take years.
Right.
I mean, it can take years, and they're looking for something that's custom off the shelf. And that's very difficult to find, where, you know, you're buying something out of a box that has everything you want. I mean, that can take years, and then by then there's new tech already out there. So it's time to be looking at some new business models.
Yeah, and what I like about the free-to-play model too is that for the games to have the longevity, you know, so that you don't play them for a while and you kind of defeat the big boss and you're done, there has to be a set of refreshed information and things that make you want to keep coming back. So
agreed.
So, you know, some games like that where we've talked about Tiny Tower before. The guys from Nimble Bits have done this one. And, you know, I have this Tiny Tower that I've built over time. And they've done some nice things where they have little quests and the like that show up on occasion for you to go do. And does that get me come back? Yes. And then I go away for a time. And I haven't played it actually now in probably a couple of weeks. But there's a little bit of persistence there. Or our Plants vs. Zombies, you know, they've added additional elements to those games too. So
I love that game.
I do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation. There's a Plants vs. Zombies 2 out there somewhere, but I don't know about that yet. I would play it if it came. Okay, so next topic that was on here too, a cross-genre gameplay. Define that for our audience just a little bit, and then we'll kick it around some.
Well, again, I've been chewing a lot on military use lately, but the idea was, and this doesn't have to be just military, the idea would be, what if you could play something in one genre of a game, and then the output of that game gets migrated to a completely separate genre of a different game? So, for example... Mm-hmm. And again, I've sort of been, my head's been in military lately, but imagine if you could have commanders playing a multiplayer real-time strategy game, you know, that's very geographic specific. And the idea is that the output of that game is a better strategy, that you've vetted a strategy with your other partnering commanders. And then that strategy, in essence, gets pushed down to a totally separate, let's say, first-person shooter game, where the platoon leaders go and play out the strategy that came through. So they're actually acting it out. I think that approach is very, very powerful, because right now everything is so canned, right? For if you're playing a first-person shooter for the military, it's okay, here's your mission goals, you know, go ahead and do this within this framework. Right. But the idea that someone else has played and optimized the strategy prior to you getting that mission, I think that could really kick up the level of learning a notch.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking, and I understand it. Maybe we need to think even further afield across genres too, because the thing that sprung to mind pretty quickly was the sports games, where they have different modes, and many of these are console games where you could be the manager of a football team, or, you know, soccer team or something like that, and then you can also then play the game as a player.
Yep.
You know, both levels within there, but What if we did something completely different, where we crossed a soccer game with something like Grand Theft Auto? You manage the team, right? Sorry, or you manage the league, and that league happens to be played in this city. And when you're in the city, you could go do some other things. But that doesn't work so well. I have to think about that some more.
Hmm.
What could we do to say, okay, really, really cross genre?
Well,
maybe something
with MRPGs, certainly MRPGs, and maybe City Sims, something like that.
Or like flight simulators and City Sims. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. That could be.
So you're controlling, you know, your jet, you know, over cities that you've built, and there are economies that the cities have, and depending on what you do with your jet, whether you're just flying and landing or I don't know.
Well, what I like about the cross genre is it gives you it gives you much more depth of knowledge in terms of the underlying systems. You know what I mean? Like, you're not just focusing on one, but you're getting some sort of a sense in terms of when you play out one, how does it affect the other? And I think that could be really powerful.
Well, the interrelatedness of systems, you know, works really well that way. Like, if you think about weather patterns, you know, so you could do something about, you know, weather, and then what does that do to things that are pretty easy, like, you know, crops. Or transportation, you know. So, you know, there may be roads that are impassable because there are percentage chances of flooding or landslides or something like that, that you now have to in your travel and transportation game, which is part of this over, you know, larger weather game, or vice versa. You've got to cater for both.
Yep.
Well,
we're on to something.
Yeah, well, no, I think we are, because I've been thinking a little bit more about this since last week when Michael and I were talking a bit more about maps and games involving maps. The point on that show was we keyed off of Andy Iannocco's example that he had in a recent MacBreak Weekly, where he said, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if the currency for map updates, so, you know, if you noticed that your one-way street is really one way the other direction, and you submitted that correction in, you could get paid in a song, right? Here's this credit to the iTunes store for a song. And we were kind of kicking that around a bit. And I was thinking a little bit about the cross-genre notion, augmented reality, street view kind of concept, where maps are something that we live in all the time. And people love to do geocaching. People love to see their environment. And there are many things that you could do that would allow you to gamify map creation and do something really interesting with user-submitted content in the way that you were describing earlier in your military examples too, but provide a nice and small incentive to the user, whether it was, you know, direct payment, like here's a credit to an app store, or here's an opportunity, like we were talking about last week, to get a unique item in world, or, you know, quasi real, like a special, you know, recording that was done specifically by an artist for as an award that you could get only through this means. So I was thinking more about the map element. So that was a little rehash from last week. So a little bit more about the map element. And Fader, did you play at all the Monopoly game, the City Streets, I think is what it was called, when that was out in beta on the web?
I didn't. But I'm a big Monopoly fan, but I haven't played that version.
Yeah, so that one, you know, just for you and for others, it was only online for a while. The deal there was that the entire world was your canvas, and you would earn money on a certain, you know, rate and pace. And with that money, you could go and buy streets, and you could put houses on those streets and earn rental income, if you will, and then continue to buy streets. And you could do, you know, Broadway in New York City, or, you know, the Straße des 17. Juni in Berlin, or, you know, one of the main streets in Tokyo. You could pick what streets you wanted, but there were so many people playing this game that a lot of people were picking streets, and you couldn't necessarily, you know, grab them.
Was it using Google Earth, or what was it using for the geotext?
I can't remember what mapping technology they were using. I don't think they were not using Google Earth, and I don't remember if they were using Google Maps or not. But part of the value of a street was you wanted really long streets, you know, because if you had a really long street, you could place a ton of houses on it, and the street would become even more valuable. And so, you know, I would go searching, for example, in the mountains of North Carolina for some of these really long roads that are kind of, you know, hidden away, that, you know, no one who is playing this game that might have been based in Boston or Bangalore or whatever would know. Well, yeah, kind of. But I was looking for ones that were even, you know, more off the beaten track. And so I would acquire all these streets, and you could see your friends and what streets they had. And then another feature of this particular game was you could put damaging buildings on other people's streets and damage their ability to earn rental income. So you could, you could put, like, you know, a dump or a nuclear, you know, waste facility or something like this, you know, in various places. And so there was it was fun. It was a little game like that. So to me, it was sort of, okay, well, what other things could you do around maps, you know, to make maps even better and provide some entertainment value or nominal value to the people who are doing that on your behalf to make your map better than anybody else's.
I really do think you're onto something. What you're describing kind of reminds me, at least about what I read about Will Wright's a new gaming engine called Hive Mind. It's the same sort of thing. Like, he's seeking a way to gamify the contributions of user-generated content in return for things like reputation or things that matter to people, like, you know, music or whatever the case might be. But I really like that idea. I think mapping is a natural. I wonder also, if there's any way, like in addition to mapping, you could do things like a more altruistic, even more altruistic, you mm-hmm. know, like helping people or Habitat for Humanity, or like, I'm just wondering if there's some way to to even gamify that.
Well, there probably is. You know, what if for Habitat, you know, you are gamifying, you know, like there's all these things that Habitat does to find renewable assets or just, yeah. you know, what people are discarding, like, you know, I've got a light fixture, yep. you know, or something like that, and making sure that they got to a Habitat. What are they called again? They're like, you know, restores. That's what they're called, right? It's for uh-huh. you take your things there and then they resell it. And then with the sales of those items, then the money goes to Habitat.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So what if you were able to identify, that's almost a geocaching kind of thing, identify, hey, you know what, yeah. I saw this couch on the road waiting to be picked up for the dumpster, you know, hey, there's a couch here, you know, you restore guys might want to go grab it.
I love it. I love that idea. God, we're giving too many good ideas out here, Michael.
imagining the power of play and the power of games applied to everyday items, right?
And the good that it can do. The good that it can do.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, well, I think we are ending on a high note here today. So another shout out to Michael. We miss you. We're sorry you're not here today. We hopefully will be at full strength soon with all three of us on the line. And I'm looking forward, Phaedra, to our next interaction. This was a lot of fun today.
Likewise, Michael. As usual, I enjoyed myself tremendously, as I hope all of our listeners did. And tune in next week.
Yep, absolutely. So, Phaedra, remind everybody how they can find you on the interwebs.
My Twitter ID is InnovateGame, and that's Innovate with the number 8.
Awesome. And you can find me on Carolina Big Blue on Twitter and various other channels as well. So thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ. We'd like to thank the guys at Zebes Systems for their rocking version of the Moon Patrol game.